Operation Sports is dedicated to sports gaming. Whether you're a hardcore fan diving deep into the intricate details of your favorite games, or a casual player just looking for a few tips to get better, or anyone in between, Operation Sports is your go-to site. Operation Sports world-famous forums are the best source for information for all your favorite sports teams of today, yesterday, and tomorrow. The forums are a goldmine of great content, from amazing roster files to make your franchises completely legit, to tons of great slider settings to personalize the experience just for you. And these are available for virtually every major sports game there is today, plus many from the past. And that's not all. You can create your own personal blog to interact with Operation Sports' dedicated community members, customizing it to your heart's content. Got an opinion about something? Publish it right on Operation Sports and interact with everyone. Operation Sports also produces a ton of great written content every day from its stable of writers and contributors, and it distributes terrific podcasts like College Football's Dual Threat and, hey, yours truly, the Press Row Podcast. So go to Operation Sports every day to be sure that you're in the know and you're having fun. Operation Sports, dedicated to sports gaming.
Hello, this is the Press Row Podcast with my daddy.
Hello, PAX East 2014. Welcome to the Press Row Podcast panel. Give yourself a round of applause. I'm excited. I'm excited for a lot of reasons. This is the second year now that we've done this panel, and there is about 50 billion percent more of you here this time, so that's exciting. So thank you, everybody, for coming out. We're going to have some fun. We are here to talk about the sports video game crisis, and that could mean a lot of different things, and we're going to talk about it from a bunch of different perspectives. But before we do that, I want to introduce the great panelists on the show. Up first, moving from left to right on your PAX East panel, we have a woman who will crush you with a 4-3 defense or with a Japanese mech, and sometimes both at the same time. From U.S. Gamer and many other places, Kat Bailey. Kat, welcome. Up next, we have a man who used the 3 hours on the Amtrak train this morning to binge-watch multiple seasons of The Shield. From Polygon, Mr. Sumit Sarkar. Sumit, welcome. Up next, we have a man who is doing everything he can right now to avoid not being down at the Riot Games League of Legends booth. From that sports gamer, Mr. TJ Lauerman. Up next, we have a man who is, at least for today, literally the voice of God. Also from Polygon, Mr. Owen Good on Skype. Owen, welcome.
Thank you, Rich.
And I am Rich Grisham. Thank you again very much for being here today. So as I mentioned, we are here to talk about the sports video game crisis. When I first pitched this panel to PAX East, it was a few months before a brand new indie golf game got announced, and a few months before RBI Baseball got announced. So I have a bunch of people saying, is there really a sports video game crisis? And I said, well, damn it, for the purposes of PAX East 2014, there better be, because that's the name of this panel. But in all seriousness, we're here to talk about this from a few different perspectives. Number one, we're going to talk about sports games from a consumer perspective. Obviously, we're all consumers of sports games. And so there's a lot of different ways that things are better than they've ever been, and ways that certain things may be worse than they've ever been. We're also going to look at it a bit from a developer standpoint. As you can imagine, I mean, those of you who write code for a living, it's a very difficult job in and of itself. And then when you're doing it under the guise of the sports video game world, it can be even more challenging. And we're also going to look at it from the publisher perspective. So that's our angle. And of course, if you guys have questions, we would love for you to participate. We've got a fellow walking around with a microphone. We'll definitely have some Q&A at the end. So I would love to hear your thoughts as well. All right? So let's start from the consumer perspective. And the thing that I ask myself a lot is, as a consumer today, as a sports video game fan, do you have enough good choices? And we're going to start with you, Kat Bailey. Do you have enough good choices?
No, not really. I used to have two NHL games, right? I mean, we don't have NHL 2K anymore. I used to have a lot more MLB games. I don't see EA in the MLB game. I don't see 2K in the MLB game anymore. We only have MLB The Show. And Fight Night's gone. Tiger Woods is on hiatus. College Football's gone. There used to be a lot more choices at the turn of the last generation. It's it's pretty bleak in a lot of ways. I mean, it's narrowed down to a few hardcore sim games and some other games such as RBI Baseball. I haven't played it, so I can't really comment on it. And it's really unfortunate to see the sports landscape really shrink like that.
Sumit Sarkar, same question to you.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, it's similar. I would say, I mean, I agree with what Kat's certainly saying, in the sense of the traditional licensed sports games regardless of whether it's like a big four sport or something like boxing, for example. But I think we're starting to see, you know, as Rich mentioned, maybe something of a new trend with the way things are now with digital distribution, where, I think I've said this on the show before, when they first announced, when HP Studios first announced the Golf Club, right, is that if you have an idea for a game that you can do without a license, which is in some cases prohibitively expensive, and you want to make it digital, that's something that is really possible now, increasingly, and it's something that wasn't so much possible at the turn of the last generation.
Who here downloaded Lacrosse from XBLA, huh? Lacrosse?
A couple of hands.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice. Oh, good. You walk into the store, either the real brick-and-mortar store or a digital storefront. Do you feel like you have enough good choices in the sports video game world right now?
For what I play, I do, but I'm unhappy that there's no NCAA football, for example. And I know why there's no NCAA, but you know, it's another lack of an option out there on the marketplace. If I was an Xbox 360 or Xbox One gamer, I would be deeply unhappy that there is no simulation baseball title available. I don't know why MLB can't get its act together on that. I know that they've had to exit a really onerous third-party license with 2K Sports, but RBI Baseball is not a full substitute. I would be disappointed as a golf fan, but I'm intrigued by Golf Club, which is coming. But, you know, again, on PlayStation, it's, you know, you're playing last year's title. I don't know if golf needs to be an annual release. It could probably be something a little bit more like Fight Night. But Fight Night is something that we haven't seen since 2011, although I understand, you know, why EA Sports is putting all of its effort to UFC coming out in June. The contraction, I think, has left us with fewer alternatives, but I think the games that are out there are worthy of all the time that we give to them, you know, particularly with well-done efforts like NBA 2K and FIFA and MLB The Show and NHL, you know, the big four. And Madden, you know, everybody piles onto Madden, but Madden has a lot of deep experience too. And so on one hand, you would want to see more competition, but on the other, I look at the games that are available and I say, these things are sucking up so much of my time, I don't know that I would really be playing competitors or alternatives anyway.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, TJ Larvin, same question to you, but slightly different in that 10, 15 years ago, you'd have 3, 4, 5 choices for a football game and for a baseball game. Do you think it was better then or better now because perhaps the quality of the limited choices we have is stronger than they were a few years ago?
I actually think it's a little bit better now, mainly because when there were 3 baseball games, if you wanted to play with your friends, you had to learn. You might have to learn 3 different baseball games to play with your 3 good friends. And now you have one that you know is great, and all 3 of you are going to play it. And that kind of works with all the sports out there now, since there's only one licensed game for each one, though NBA and soccer still have 2 games. But having the one solid choice that you know is going to be a good game kind of makes it a better purchasing decision. You don't have to go, is this MLB 2K13 good? No, it's not. I'm going to get MLB The Show and not mess that up.
The thing that I find most interesting is all the people that I talk to that play sports games, we all have very specific ways that we like to play it. Like, TJ is a maniac with Mutt, with Ultimate Team. I never play Ultimate
Team. Take my money.
If for those of you who listen to the show, know that I'm playing the NBA 2K14, my career, like a maniac. Like, that's how I'm focusing most of my time. I know that Sumit will play nothing but Road to the Show in MLB. Kat, you're big in you're in two online Madden leagues at least, maybe even more. Like, just the panelists, we all play these games very differently. I don't know that I would personally even have the ability to process if there were three or four of these games. I guess in theory it'd be nice to have more choices, but in reality, I don't know that that would help or perhaps even hinder the process.
On the other hand, more choices are always good, right? And if a game isn't really up to snuff in a particular year, and with all due respect to any NHL developers in the audience, I've been very vocal about the fact that I haven't been a big fan of this year's NHL release, it's good to have more options.
I agree with that. So, are you getting your money's worth? This is an even more of a loaded question, right? $60 is a lot of money to spend on a video game. And if you're playing Ultimate Team, chances are that you're paying even more than just that $60.
Yeah, right? $60. $60.
Right?
Straight up, $60. Good.
So, money and value is absolutely in the eye of the beholder. But, Kat, do you... Actually, we're going to start with you, TJ. TJ, do you feel that you're getting your money's worth when you buy these games right now?
Yeah, when you buy the regular game, because you're getting so many modes now. You're getting your Dynasty, your Online, your Ultimate Team, you know, best mode there is in the game, and your single player stuff. There's so much you can do in each game that you're easily going to get your $60 worth. Even if you break it up, like, did I make really play $15 worth of Road to the Show? Yeah.
I mean, I look at a game like NBA Live, right? I bought NBA Live.
Then I did, too, because of him.
Yeah, I'm the one. And I didn't play it hardly at all, right? It's not a particularly enjoyable experience, especially when compared to NBA 2K14. I look at NBA 2K14, I've probably put 100 hours into that game. Oh, and good, you've gone deep in a few games and dabbled in a few others for review and never gone back. Do you feel overall or in specifically... you are getting your money's worth when you plunk down $60 for a licensed sim sports game right now.
Well, hold on. I have to pause my PS Vita Road to the Show game I'm playing right now. I'm getting beaten by Albuquerque pretty badly. I think the Justice Department is going to open an investigation, but no. I feel like I do get value... $60 worth of value. I raised this comparison a couple years ago and got really dumped on for being a shill for the publishers. But when you think about it, if you're buying a particular title every year and you're utterly committed to it and it's $60, what are the people who are playing MMOs paying in subscription fees? Now, yes, obviously that is a segment that is moving toward free-to-play. So that makes the point a little less salient. But I do feel like there is a lot of value in having the current edition of the game, even though you never want to say, yeah, it's just a roster update. And I do feel like the developers are putting in meaningful changes. I mean, you know, the show, as I wrote, the show this year has a feature that makes previous editions of the show feel thin by comparison. And we were all happy with previous editions of the show. So I feel like I'm getting value, you know, for my dollar here. I don't get value when I take the old editions back to GameStop and trade them in for store credit, though. I traded in my my old copies of MLB 13 on both Vita and PS3 and got a total of $8.10. But that's neither here nor there. I would say, yeah, good value for your dollar, especially the fact that we're going into a new console generation and the prices are holding at $60, and they're going to have to make that up in other ways, and they will, and they'll do that through microtransactions and Ultimate Team things like that. But overall, they're still justifying the cost.
You know, I look at a game like the launch Madden for the PS4. We're now in year three of our Madden online season. I've gotten more value out of the PS4 Madden than I've gotten probably any of the Maddens of the previous generation. So, Sumit, same question to you with a slight bit of twist. What sports game have you personally bought that you feel really delivered the value, and is there one that you can clearly point to that didn't? For you personally.
I'm trying to think. Recently, I spent way more time with NBA 2K14 than I thought I would, because I'm not like a big basketball fan. I would say In terms of the big four, my favorite sports are like baseball, then football and hockey, and then basketball like way behind. Maybe that's because I'm a Knicks fan. I don't know. But I really, really got into the my career mode in NBA 2K14 on PS4 specifically, because I thought they did some really cool stuff with the cutscenes, even if they're unskippable. I was really surprised by how much I got into that mode, because I'd reviewed 2K13, but didn't really play it much after I finished reviewing it. That's pretty much the only mode I play is my career. I don't play online because I would lose, and I don't really do the season or the franchise stuff. I think what Rich was saying about noting how each of us plays a distinct mode, like that answers the question right there of value, in the sense of, you know, each of us could probably say that we get $60 of value out of a single mode in a single game that might have like three or four other main modes that people also really love. As for a game that like didn't deliver value, I mean, I'm trying to think, and like maybe you can point to some like downloadable games. I'm trying to think. Like I can't think of a game in recent memory that I bought that didn't deliver value. Certainly, there are games out there like, I don't know, MLB 2K13, that was literally a roster update that you would probably regret having spent $60 on if you had done that. I feel really sorry for you if you did.
So another question, and you know, we talk about the different modes, is what about the actual experiences? Like, I think it's pretty easy to say that all of the major sports games, your FIFAs, your NBA 2Ks, your Maddens, your MLB The Show, do at least a good, and in some cases terrific job of representing the core game, playing 9-on-9 baseball, 11-on-11 soccer, and so on. We've talked about it quite a bit on the show. Do you want a different experience than you're getting? Like, I've talked about, man, I would love in baseball to be able to play as Roger Maris, chasing Babe Ruth's record. Like, just a different kind of way. We have a lot of fun talking about some different ways that we play online and things like that. So, Kat, let's go back to you with this one. Is there a specific experience that you want out of sports games that you're not getting at all right now?
No. I mean, well, okay, yes. I definitely want a historical mode. I would really enjoy that. But I also understand that there are a lot of barriers standing in the way of developers. I went and checked out MLB The Show on the PS4 recently, and I posed the same question again to the developers, and they were telling me, well, there are just too many barriers. People under 20 don't necessarily care about Babe Ruth and Mickey Mantle, et cetera. It was the same old song and dance, and it just told me that we're probably not going to get that anytime soon. When it comes to actually whether they're worth, whether I'm getting my gaming dollar value out of these games for $60, I mean, to a degree, I'm getting it because I'm crazy. I play these games all the time. But to a more casual sports fan who are curious about these games, $60 is daunting. And in this day and age where you can get so much free entertainment or you can get so much cheap entertainment, it's really retrograde to have these annual releases coming out at a really high price, relatively speaking, and asking people to invest year after year. You're going to have a core group that's going to keep doing that, but you're not necessarily going to have a broader group. And that's one of the biggest problems facing sports games right now, is that the core audience is shrinking. You're getting a lot of people saying, man, this is way too intense for me. This is way too hardcore for me. And the $60 price point annual release is part of that.
You know, I don't know if anybody here saw, we did TJ and Brian Weedy from Pasta Potter and I did a live hangout a couple nights ago, and we were talking about MLB The Show in particular. I am shocked at how little I am enjoying the Road to the Show mode this year. What? I actually thought that because the saves are going to carry forward, I was going to jump in and be completely psyched. But I've played so much Road to the Show that this year it doesn't do anything for me. Thank goodness that they introduced the new player lock, where you can start the game as one guy and then jump to somebody else in the middle of the game and then play the whole team, like to close out the game. Like, Player Lock has completely ruined me for Road to the Show, because now I can experience this whole new way to play baseball. So thank goodness they put that in there, because otherwise I would be like, wow, I don't feel like doing the same thing over and over again. Owen Good, same question for you. Is there an experience that you want out of sports video games that you are not getting right now?
I think the time has come for FIFA to incorporate women's soccer on some kind of a meaningful level. And I understand the technical challenges to this. I understand the licensing challenges to this. And you certainly don't want to do it in a way that makes it feel tokenized or like an add-on. But you can only stage so many women's World Cups that, you know, create celebrities that are followed intently in sports media and on Twitter and by fans, and then, you know, come back and there's no video game alternative. I know that there's an issue with even the physics engine, obviously, when you're dealing with different player models that would be shorter or less heavy. I understand that you want to have a meaningful competition for Megan Rapinoe, Abby Wambach, and, you know, then you would want Marta and the Brazilian sides, and you certainly don't want ringers in there, because we saw what happened with, I believe, the UEFA product. But this has got to be addressed at some point, and I don't know if it should be a separate game or a mode within FIFA, but they need to do something about that.
So, Mitzhar Kar, same question. Is there a way that you want to experience any major sports video game that you're just not getting right now?
Well, for me, I think what we talked about with baseball a couple episodes ago on the podcast, with the historical stuff, that's something I've always been super interested in. I like majored in history in college, and that's a big part of the reason why I fell in love with baseball, was the history of the sport and of my favorite team, the greatest team in the world, the New York Yankees. And
they're in enemy territory, Sumit.
So that's like the big thing for me. I get that it might not be appealing to people who don't really follow the sport or who are young and stupid, but that's one thing for me. But to Owen's point, I think diversity of experiences is really important. But at the same time, what Kat was saying was important too, is diversity of price points, which is why I'm, you know, looking forward to hopefully more availability of digitally distributed titles that are hopefully cheaper around this generation of consoles. I think a lot of sports game developers have really spent the past generation trying to diversify their game in the sense of the way it's played to make it more accessible, which everyone hates, but I think is a good idea in theory. It's just that, to Kat's point, you can make a game as accessible as you want. You can add, you know, two button controls or whatever, but like if you're still charging $60, then that's a really hard sell for a more casual fan. So I think, you know, there's room for experimentation certainly within the major $60 sports games, but also room for experimentation within the genre, in offering different experiences at different price points.
Yeah, if you don't mind me jumping in, I think that they have to completely rethink the way that these games are delivered. And as far back as like 2008, 2009, I was saying, why not release a game and then release expansion packs year on year until like, say, 2013, which are a lot more palatable to buy if you're buying like $10 updates with new modes, new everything, and people already have the game. So it's a lot easier sell. And if you keep adding in I know microtransactions are the devil, but if you keep adding in those microtransaction-driven elements, I mean, you're already seeing it happen with Madden Ultimate Team. I don't see why that could be a much better approach to selling a sports game.
And that was how Ultimate Team started, right? I think it was, or in FIFA, I think when they first released it, it was like a $10 add-on to, I think, FIFA 09, and that was an experiment for them, mm-hmm. and it was hugely successful. Like, they literally were not prepared server-wise when they released it in, I think, March or something of that year. And then the following release of the game, they included it on or they released it like shortly after release or something as a free digital update, and then like the next year it was on the disc, and now it's like the most popular mode in that game, right? So that's a way that I think people, publishers can start to at least test the waters.
DJ Larriman, you are an Ultimate Team fanatic. You are an online league guy. Are you getting the experiences you want out of these games, or is there something missing that you you would really want to see?
The main thing I think is missing is a sense of the history of these sports. Like, you see it a lot in Ultimate Team. A new Thurman Thomas card comes out. All the kids are like, yeah, I got to get this new Thurman Thomas 97 truck running over guys. It's like, yeah, but you never saw Thurman Thomas. You don't know who he is. You're just getting that guy because of his stats. I like what Tiger Woods and the WWE series have done, where showing you the history of the game or of the show or whatever you're doing. And I just think that's something we really need, because especially in baseball with such a rich history, mm-hmm. you don't see anything of it. You'll see some throwback jerseys, but you'll never see Don Larson's perfect game in
right.
a game.
I think Owen's favorite mode in a basketball game is probably still NBA's greatest, right, Owen, yeah. in 2K12?
Oh, that was the best. I spent so much time playing the greatest mode, and all it did was just unlock the teams, but the way that they portrayed the individual basketball players, the traits, I mean, it was uncanny how, like, when you're playing with Jerry West, like, they had Jerry West down somehow. I don't know how they did it, but it was amazing. So many of those cool things. Yeah. I love that mode in NBA.
And FIFA just added all their legends for the Xbox this year, and kids have never seen any of those people play in real life.
Right.
Like, there's Pele in the game.
There's Maradona.
You just know he's a 99, yeah. and you don't care about what he is.
All right, so we talked quite a bit about consumers, and we're going to hear from you at the end of the show what you are and are not getting out of. But I want to talk a little bit about developers. Over the last 5 years or so, I've gotten to meet several developers, really, for all the major games. And for a living, I work for a software company. So I have a lot of experience in like building code, not video games or things like that, though. But one of the questions that I ask myself a lot, and is not discussed very often, is, are the people who are actually producing the game, writing the code, are they set up for success or failure? Owen Good, you have also been writing about this subject and talking to developers for years. Do you feel that the guys who are actually building the games are set up to succeed, or are they literally between a rock and a hard place?
I don't know that it's necessarily set up for failure, but you're definitely talking about a model of development that is rooted in the past, which would be, you know, you push the game out, it's finished, you go spend, as, you know, Peter Moore says this all the time, you push the game out, it's finished, you go spend 3 weeks on a beach somewhere, then you come back and start working on next year's game, and you're not doing anything to the game you just released. That's acceptable in the old days where these games, the rosters were not updated by the internet throughout the year. You know, there was not additional downloadable content, things like Ultimate Team modes, things like that. The problem is, I think the problem is the licensors. And they're not the most forward-thinking bunch. They are making a lot of money off a contract that requires a game every year and need to be convinced of a newer model, and I think we really have to wait until the age of everything is digitally distributed, and what you do is you subscribe to a game, and then it is continually updated, and your engine is updated every 2 years or something like that. I know that gamers hear that and go, oh, great, I'm going to be paying more for less game, but when I talk to developers, I hear that they get about 6 months to work on new features, because after that, they've got to be in alpha. And that's not a hell of a lot of time to put new things into the game, or either both to design and then to implement. And there also is a real fear of building toward things that don't pan out, because that's money down a rat hole. I mean, we all remember the QB Vision Cone. Great example there, right?
Yes, we do. Yes, okay. We do.
So, you know, you do bury your mistakes, and they cost a lot of money in this. And so you've seen with the increase in development costs, things get a lot more conservative. There, it is an outdated model. I cannot say that they're set up for failure, not when we see so many success stories. I mean, NBA 2K had three consecutive years, 10, 11, and 12, where it was just like, how are they going to outdo that? And they did.
You're right.
So there still is room for creative thinking and outdoing yourself within this, but something will have to give. And I think what pushes things over the dam will be when we really are downloading all of our games and physical media is now the minority of purchases.
One of the things that struck me when I was at an event and I was chatting with Mike Young, who's the creative director for Madden, is one of the things that always surprises him is that a small update will be made that will completely break something else that you can't even see how they would be related. But when you were talking about some of these games where the foundation has been in existence for 10 or more years on now three consoles, I have to think that the combination of that amount of code to wrangle and the number of people that have their hands in it and doing the builds and all that in such a crunched six-month treadmill has to be very difficult to work under those conditions, as well as to come up with new and exciting and interesting ways to play the game. Kat Bailey, am I off base with that, or do you think that's a big problem?
Yeah, I was going to say that. I've talked to so many developers who've worked on sports games, and they so often go into these games, and they're really excited. You know, they're sports fans. They love the sport. They've probably been playing Madden since they were kids, and they're really psyched to be working on these games, and within a year or two, they're burned out and moving on because the crunch, they don't get to see their families. They don't get a break. And there's a lot of burnout. And teams lose talent. Now, that's not universal. I mean, games like MLB The Show and NBA 2K have been able to retain a lot of talent. And you can see in the continuity of how well the games are made and how good they are, but it is a real problem with a short turnaround. It's a tough gig if you're a game developer, really tough.
Yeah, I mean, who here works for a software company in one way or the other, right? I mean, there's crunch mode in any software development, but it sure seems that when you're making games, you're in crunch mode a lot longer. Does that ultimately serve the customer as well as the studio? Submit your thoughts.
Well, I think crunch is a problem across the game industry, not just with sports games. And you know, people have tried to sort of make various efforts over the years to curb that, but hasn't really come to fruition at this point. But when you look at the quality of the games that we have nowadays, and you think about what goes into making that happen, that's not something that really, I think, is visible to a lot of consumers. I think, you know, certainly you're seeing more communication from developers a lot more these days with, you know, developer diaries and blog posts and things like that, but I think it's really hard to get a sense, if you're an average consumer, of, you know, all the work that goes into these games. It's really easy to jump on a message board and, you know, like, send death threats to whoever because you didn't like a feature or whatever. And I'm not saying that means...
I apologized for that, all right? Come on, man. Jeez, keep
and
bringing it up.
Obviously, that's not to say that, you know, we shouldn't be critical, you know, if the situation warrants it. But it's something to be cognizant of, I think, in the way we view these things, because they're products, but they are also... creative output, the output of, you know, sometimes hundreds of people working for, you know, months and months on a very tight schedule. So I would just say that people should be aware of that if they're not already.
I mean, you hear, it drives us all crazy, right? Those of us who love sports games, you hear people say all the time, oh, it's just a roster update. Oh, it's the same game with, you know, a new skin. And those of us who play these games and talk about them know that, for the most part, unless you're MLB 2K13, that's not the case. You know, we talk about FIFA. I mean, I think it's universally recognized that FIFA and MLB The Show and NBA 2K are, in many ways, terrific games. lots of questions about certain design decisions that are put in, particularly like with the microtransactions in BC and NBA 2K. But there's clear evidence that given the right set of circumstances, the development team can come up with new and interesting ways to make the game interesting and challenging in that short time frame. TJ, do you feel like you're getting enough innovation on a year-to-year basis with your favorite games?
Yes and no. I mean, we always want so much stuff for the next year to make our purchase seem like it's worth it. But you know, when they go into the next iteration, the first meeting for the next iteration of the game, they say, we want to add these three new features. They're going to be the greatest things ever. They start working on one. They get a little bit of problem. All right, we got to move some team from over here. We're going to put them on this. And then a little bit down the road, they're like, all right, you know what? We're going to push this off till next year. And then the other mode that they're working on, oh, you know what? We got to put all this into the one because we changed one little thing. And like as you said before, it broke three other things we never saw happening down the line. And three games later, you still haven't implemented one of those things that you wanted to put in. And with these time crunches they have, it's almost impossible for them to pull off some of the stuff they even do now.
One of the other things, too, that I talk to a lot of people about is the expectations year to year with these games are so significant. Are they reasonable? Is it reasonable for us as consumers? I know in a perfect world we should be able to have high expectations, but is it reasonable every year for us to expect the new Madden, the new NBA, the new NHL, the new MLB, the show to deliver an eye-popping new experience? Is that a reasonable expectation to submit? Oh, go ahead, On.
And that was me.
Oh, go ahead, Kat.
Well, no.
Somebody, go ahead. Save me up here.
Yes, I just wanted to jump in. No, it's not reasonable because, I mean, making these games is a huge amount of effort. It's ridiculous. But the way that they're being sold makes people expect a whole new game, a whole new experience, a whole new campaign, even though sports games don't have campaigns. And inevitably, there's going to be some disappointment when their shiny new $60 game comes out and they're told, well, it has 150 new animations and we've tuned up some things in the Road to the Show mode. And if you look really closely, there's some new camera angles in there. And sure, like, I'm going to feel the balance differences because I play these games 300 hours a year. I'm a crazy person, like I said. But maybe the average consumer is going to go, what's going on here? I don't get it. Or worse, a game comes out like Madden 13, and they go, what is this connected careers thing? Where's my franchise mode? Where'd it go? And then you have Open Revolt, and people are going crazy. So in a lot of ways, sports games are being set up to fail because they're being marketed as this huge new thing when they're really just iterative every year.
You know, Owen, the question I have for you on this topic is, if you were in charge of producing a annually licensed sports sim game that has been coming out for years, like a Madden or an NBA 2K, we all have those things that bother us every single year. Right? Like for Madden forever, it's been blocking. In NBA 2K, it's some certain, you know, play in the post doesn't feel right. You know, there's things. Would you, Owen, as a developer, somebody in charge of making those sort of decisions on the line, would you focus more on addressing legacy issues or would you focus more on new features if it were up to you with these games?
As I understand it, they divide things between legacy issues that need to be blended out and new features. I mean, I'm not really answering your question, but I'm sort of describing how they go after this. And I think you mentioned earlier that, you know, when Mike Young said they bring in something that sounds great and then it totally breaks the code base for some reason because they've got to get all these parts to play nice together and they really don't know how they will or won't. And then they spend a lot of time figuring out how to pull that off. And there's a lot of time lost there. What I think people don't realize is this, and this is kind of the dirty secret of annual sports video games, which is, let's look at the Infinity Engine, the real-time physics for Madden. They put that in knowing that that is going to be like a five-year project to get it to an ideal state. And yet they've still got to sell you the first year of the game with it involved, knowing that you're going to have all kinds of weird glitch videos, knowing that it's going to do strange things to the blocking, knowing that it's going to do this through the next second and third and fourth year. So I think if you're to ask me my choice on this, it's that, okay, let's triage what we're doing. Did we put in like a major feature that has one of those long-term commitments, you know, last edition? And if so, that gets the priority. Now the legacy issues created by that have to get the priority, because people expect every year that the problems are going to be solved. And if they're not solved, then it's a long-running deficiency. And why the hell aren't these guys doing their job? So I would have to say I come down on the side of fix legacy issues, but you still have to introduce new features. I think what the gap is getting people to understand new features in an iterative title will take a long time to get to an ideal state. And you see that, hell, you see that with NBA 2K. And, I mean, look at its controls, for God's sake. I mean, they still go through... I mean, how many times did they change their basic control structure?
3 years in a row.
Exactly. So, you know, this isn't something that's just, you know, a game that's had its ups and downs, like Madden is running around with, like, chickens with head cut off. I mean, it affects everybody. And I think I would put the priority on legacy.
Sumit Sarkar, you're a reporter. You're at the front line of the hype machine coming from the marketing department. You talk to the developers. Are the expectations set by the various parts of the sports game machine reasonable?
Well, I think Kat made a really good point about the price and the expectations that come with that $60 a year price point there. But the thing is that what I was saying earlier, you know, the consumers aren't aware of the sort of realities of development, and that's not, I mean, like, it's good to be aware of that, but also, like, as a reviewer, I don't factor that, like, into my score. Like, if I knew that they had a really rough road, well, like, no, like, I'm reviewing for the consumer. Like, I'm reviewing the ultimate experience of the game, and sort of all that other stuff is essentially ancillary. You know, it's like, okay, like, you had this really protracted development cycle, but, you know, is the game good? Like, that's the ultimate decision the ultimate thing that people have to realize when they're making a buying decision, right? Sorry.
Sumit, if I can jump in, how do you define a good sports game or a good update?
Wait, what? Sorry.
When you say, is the game good? I mean, there are a lot of different definitions of good when it comes to a sports game, because... I mean, say MLB The Show might be good, but from an annual game perspective, maybe you're like going, it's not that different than last year.
Yeah, and so that's like the really big issue with sports games, and that's, you know, sort of gets at what Rich was asking about in terms of people's expectations on a year-to-year basis. And I think, like, for legacy issues versus innovation in a sports game, what it comes down to is another question that Rich touched on before about, you know, whether developers are set up to succeed or fail. It really is these days up to the officials in the development, you know, the production staff at the top. It's really, the onus is on them to create a great plan, a forward-thinking plan. So I'll give a quick anecdote. I did a feature story on this guy Clint Oldenburg for Polygon. He's a former NFL offensive lineman, and now he works on Madden. He's working on the blocking team. And blocking, as we all know, has been an issue in Madden for a long time, for like the entire last generation of consoles. It was a problem. It didn't really get better year after year. I spoke to Clint about that. I spoke to like three other top Madden developers, and you know what they were saying was like, yeah, we realized that blocking was an issue, but Clint really had to sell it with the stuff that he and his team developed, because fixing legacy issues is very unsexy. It's not something that you can sell a game on, like to put on the back of a box.
Yeah. Like, look, we fixed a bunch of bugs.
Yeah, like our game used to be crappy. It's less crappy now. the blocking is better. That's not going to really attract eyeballs to your game, you know, let alone get people to buy it. And so what Clinton and his team had to do was they had prototypes of their new blocking system, and they did before and after footage to really show to the rest of the studio and to the marketing team, like, why it was important to allocate development resources to fix blocking, why it made the game more realistic, and why it made the game more fun. So I think whichever way you look at it, legacy issues or innovation, it really is, you have to determine whether it makes the game more fun. And once you choose to, once you decide on something, you really have to, as Owen was pointing out with a big feature, plan it out, years into the future about how you're going to handle the way that the development of legacy issues is intertwined with the development of new features.
TJ Lowerman, you know the feeling, right? A new game is coming out. You get excited about it. You're pumped. You watch the videos. When you match up your experience that first week or two after getting the game versus the expectations that were coming from the marketing group and the publishers, do those line up? Have those been reasonable in your recent experience?
Yeah, you always get that first week high of, this game's amazing. It's so much better than last year's. And then two or three weeks in, you're like, huh, the same stuff happens. Like, I was watching a Madden Tips video last night where the blocking in next gen is so much better, but if you just move your cornerback out a little bit further, the left guard, he just walks right by him. Great, great job.
Got to write that down, by the way.
Yeah. And that's the real hard part about reviewing sports video games, too, is MLB 14 might be someone's first baseball game. They've never played one before. And it could also be someone's 10th baseball game that they've played.
Right.
And we saw that with NBA Live, where a week after they put out the game, they're like, oh, right, we haven't put out one of these in forever. Nobody knows how to play this game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so hard to wrap your head around. They have to fix what was broken last year, and they have to add new stuff, and they have no time. And you want more modes. It's just so much to do.
We could do a whole panel. We won't, but we could do a whole panel on reviewing a licensed sports video game. I mean, MLB The Show just came out.
The sneak online preview for next year.
The online is completely broken. But
yeah, but we knew that already, right?
But the offline is great. How do you review that, right? Like, if I'm not going to play online and I'm just going to play Player Lock and Road to the Show, is that good for me? There's a whole separate issue around reviewing these games.
I have 20 or 24 people ready to play a PS4 MLB online franchise.
Can't do it.
We have no idea what's going to happen when the PS4 comes out.
Can't do it.
It could be hot garbage. I'll send one email and saying we can't do this.
Yeah. All that and like, it's a great example. The expectation, MLB The Show, they pushed online franchise.
They fixed it this year, Rich. They fixed it this year.
It doesn't work. Literally doesn't work. We played, I don't know how many games, it doesn't work. Submit your thoughts.
Well, I'm actually curious for Owen's thoughts on this question, because he formerly worked at Kotaku, and now he works with us at Polygon. And in Kotaku, when they review games, they don't put numbers on the end. They just have a yes, no, maybe scale. You might have noticed that if you read Owen's review of Madden NFL 25 on old-gen consoles, the infamous no. Owen, for you, I'm wondering, because your first review for Polygon was MLB 14, and you had to put a number on the end of that one. And as Rich was saying, it's broken online, but pretty awesome offline. So how did you sort of deal with that shift from no scores to scores?
If I understood the question, it's basically how could I review it so highly if the online mode and the expectations there, where it fails the expectations? It's an individual reviewer preference, and that is, I don't play baseball online. I think it's a game that is almost impossible to play online because it is fundamentally about timing, and there are too many variables when you play online with the connection that will disrupt whether you're trying to hit a ball or how you are trying to set up a hitter to not hit the ball. I think the core game is what matters the most, and if they didn't do what they did in the core of this game with player lock and to a lesser degree quick counts. And Rich, going back to what you said earlier about Road to the Show, I think they've refined that enough to keep it interesting. At least it does for me, but you know, that's a personal taste. If they made few to no changes in the main core of the game, which you look at NBA 2K and you look at FIFA and you look at NHL, they were roundly criticized for sort of being stand pat additions as they came to the end of the last console generation. If MLB had followed the same direction and its big promise was online franchise and the thing did not work, then yes, it would be beaten up a lot harder than it was. But I do think on some level you have to carry into your own and readers' expectations, and that is baseball is not a game that has historically ever been playable online. The game that you play online doesn't resemble the game that you play either offline or the game that is played in real life. And so I just, it's kind of a shitty thing, but I'm willing to have a double standard there where I would not for a game like Madden or for NBA if it encounters online failures. And that's just how I am as a reviewer.
So let's look at it now from a publisher standpoint. One of the things that drives me crazy is EA is a public company, but yet they don't disclose how much they pay the NFL for their maybe exclusive, maybe not exclusive license. We do know, we get this question all the time, we do know that the contracts that the video game companies sign with the leagues force them to release a new game every year. So the dream of the roster update, other than MLB 2K13, is just a dream as these contracts are currently scheduled. So, Kat, you mentioned earlier the number of people playing sports game is shrinking, even though the top sports games regularly appear in the NPD top 10. So the question is, now in this new generation where it's so much more digitally driven, does the business model, the annual sports game license, you know, the forcing of by contract to do it, does that business model work? Is it going to work? Now that people are getting new ways of experiencing their games, Kat?
Well, that's a big question, but
I'm starting with you.
I think you all know my thoughts on that. I think that the $60 a year model is going extinct across all of gaming. I don't think that's just a case of sports games. The AAA game as we know it is going away. I mean, it's still around, but a company like EA is going down to, say, one or two AAA games per year rather than a whole bunch. And sports games, almost by definition, are AAA games because they have the best graphics. They have really high-tech engines. They push the technology as hard as they can for the most realistic experience. And as the consoles keep getting more and more advanced, as budgets continue to grow, it's harder and harder to make money, especially off that hardcore audience. Now, sports games do have an advantage in that they're more mainstream than a lot of games. I mean, by nature. There are a lot of people who would buy a PS4 just to play MLB The Show or buy a PS4 just to play Madden. That's an advantage, but I don't know that sports games are taking advantage of that right now.
Oh, and these publishers spend millions of dollars a year before spending a dime one on development. They have to sell a significant number of copies to come close to breaking even. Does the current business model, is it sustainable moving forward in this new console generation?
Well, I mean, it depends on who's defining sustainability. If the leagues and their players' unions continue to define it as sustainable, then your options are to play ball with them or not at all. We've seen willingness in leagues and players' unions to work with licensors or licensees to, you know, especially when you have a labor stoppage. We saw that with Madden in 2011. Mm-hmm. And I believe we saw that with the NBA, although it wasn't as public in the same year. But, you know, Madden is the kind of thing that creates a lot of royalties, in some cases upwards of $30 million paid to the players' union alone, although that figure was significantly reduced during the strike year, excuse me, the lockout year. That's a very important distinction. And that should tell you about the size of EA's deal with the league itself, which has been described as second only to the broadcast contracts. But a lot of it is backloaded and based on sales. It's just the kind of thing that is. And I think the real big key to sports video games development, publishing, excuse me, not development, this is a different thing, publishing, is how do we get these leagues to buy into something that is not annual, something that is persistent, something that is more ongoing? How do we give them the feeling that they are getting just as much money? Hell, what are the royalties off of something that is a constant subscription? You know, how is that calculated? Is it new subscriptions? Is it active? Whatever. It is semi-sustainable, but again, it's sort of all in the eye of the beholder. And I think actually that's why you see the kind of contraction you do see, is that a league like Major League Baseball probably has a higher opinion of the value of its brand to a licensed video game than the publishing sector is willing to give to it. And that's why you're seeing RBI Baseball 14 this year on Xbox as opposed to anything else.
All right, so I think I want to make sure that we give you guys an opportunity to pose some questions. So at this point in time, anybody who has a question, you want to bring up a topic, here's the microphone, please.
MSU Hitman from St. Louis. I interact with Owen quite a bit on Twitter, and I wanted to ask the panel, do you think Microsoft has to either write a blank check to EA or contractually get out of their agreement with the EA to pursue a third-party baseball deal? Because right now, I work at the second highest volume sales volume GameStop in St. Louis. GameStop is making mint off selling MLB 2K 13 copies for $30 used, or people are trading in 360s for PS3s. And it's also kind of a second point to, you're talking so much about digital distribution. In the Midwest, if it's not on disc, it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Period. I mean, if I tell somebody coming in store, oh, you can download RBI. No. We had 40 pre-orders for Minecraft on disc. I mean, that is just, so just your thoughts.
Yeah, I look at baseball on the Xbox platform as a real challenge. To create a game from scratch is a massive amount of work. You look at what happened with EA and NBA Live. They're struggling. I wish that Microsoft had leveraged the High Heat game license that they bought years ago, but they haven't. So I don't think, personally, that we're going to see like that blank check be written. I don't think there's enough of a market of people to justify the cost, but that's my opinion. Owen, do you think that that Microsoft will do anything to promote a baseball game coming onto their platform?
I think it's got too many irons in the fire elsewhere to pick up this kind of an expensive license. And, yes, as you point out, spinning up a video game in a single year is a sports video game is close to impossible, as proven by the NBA Live franchise. If it's not been in development in secret to now, which, you know, is not to say it couldn't have happened, because last year MLB 2K was not an exclusive license, but it just, this is the kind of thing that doesn't strike me as within Microsoft's character, and MLB is in a real pickle.
Okay, cool.
Wait, let me say, I want to comment on that. After NBA Live came out, the first thing I thought was, dear God, don't bring back MVP baseball. Because I loved NBA Live, and when they brought that back, it was nothing like what I used to love. Now, if they'll give Konami the money to bring over their Japanese baseball game, then TJ's I'm in. Because that game's amazing. Game. I'll spend $100 to import that, even though I can only play Exhibition and Home Run Derby.
The guy cannot figure out how to play a season. All right, next question.
Okay, you yourself said that you're a big NBA 2K14 fan.
Yes.
You play the My Player.
Mm-hmm.
And do you play it as well, and you do the... No, you don't. But you like the
auction
the
block
team, right?
Yeah, no auction block. That's why I don't like that.
Okay. What I'm wondering is, do you think that the VC, the virtual currency for the game, is too expensive and relied on too heavily in the game to move your player forward in the My Player, and then also with the back end, you like the Ultimate Team Creator, the same way there? I find, as someone who's played the 2K series since it came out on the Dreamcast, this year has just been a slap in the face with the VC. I'm loving it. The PS4 version, it was probably the best game that came out on the PS4 when it launched, but it's just ridiculous with the VC and how they rely on it. What do you think?
Yeah, I feel very dirty whenever I talk about NBA 2K14 because I love the game and I love the My Career Player. And I mentioned it, I play on the treadmill, so like every night I get on and I play like a full game. I've actually found by not spending anything, just using the VC that I get, but just by playing that single mode, for me, that's a nice progression. My player's improved, but not dramatically. The problem with VC is that it's spread throughout the whole game. So if you want to be doing a GM and your own player, you're not getting the right value because they want you to spend the money on it. So got a couple more questions here.
You had mentioned that leagues are not particularly open to new ideas, particularly in terms of distribution, but do you get the sense that any league is more or less open to new ideas?
Smith?
I think that when you look at what MLB is doing with RBI this year, it's a new thing for them to do a console game, but last year they had, it was like Home Run Derby, and there's another,
franchise MVP.
Right, yeah, yeah. So when you look at them, they're unique in that they have MLB Advanced Media, which is like this really, it's really doing well, this crazy, digital interactive arm of their business that does crazy things like track every single pitch and every single game and every year and, get all that data and use it to make it available to teams and things like that. So they sort of have the ability to experiment with that kind of stuff. The thing is that they're doing it on their own. They're not, making that license available to other parties. So I don't know that maybe you'd call them more open in that sense, but they are trying new things. They're entering new markets. And I think we'll see, hopefully other, the thing is that what Owen was saying about the license for a full simulation product, it's easy for us to say, oh man, I wish that the publishers would sell cheaper sports games, or do whatever, experiment with the price points. But also, I think from the licensor side, for them, they see that as a license worthy of a marquee product, right? So they don't necessarily want to see that used in a cheaper product, because this is something that is tough in marketing to deal with, tough to understand maybe for consumers, but a lot of times, right, if something is priced cheaper, it has a perceived lower value. So I think that's an issue that they deal with, which is why you're seeing, if there's experimentation like MLB is doing, they're doing it with mobile games, with these really small scale digital games rather than a full retail product.
I also think, too, you look at certain leagues like the NHL, I'm very surprised at how violent they allow their game to be. Mm-hmm. Like the fighting and stuff in that game is brutal. I think a couple of years you'll see that toned down. Leagues are very protective of their brand and get more protective and conservative with that every year. Yes, next question.
Sorry, I may be out of place here, but some of my favorite sports games were not the serious sports sims. It seems like the only thing in the market is the guy who likes to play MLB, excuse my language, for 300 hours.
Yes.
So where are the products like a Sega Soccer Slam, like a Wayne Gretzky's 3D Hockey, that used to occupy that 15, 20 hours a year that you played with your friends?
Yes. No, it's a great question. It's a question that I had on the list and didn't get to it, so I'm really glad you brought it up. We all want those games. Like, everybody in this room can probably point to their favorite sports game being something that was not a licensed sim game, right? Like, NBA Street Volume 2 is one of my all-time favorite games, right?
An astounding
The Bigs.
So, and the Bigs, good lord, right? So the short answer is there must not be enough of a market, because if there was, those games would be produced. You look at, like, Blitz and FIFA Street, like, these are massive licensed, massive brands, and the games really went nowhere. I mean, Kat, why don't we see more arcade sports games, or any?
Well, with all due respect, they haven't been very good, or they've been pretty limited, and one of the biggest problems that I perceive right now in the sports game space is that there isn't a burnout paradise to right. the mediums, you know, Forza or Gran Turismo, right? There isn't that really raw, high-quality, well-produced sports game that's more arcadey, that's not as intense, that can get new people in there. It's gone. The pendulum has swung too far to the sim side.
Yeah, and I think it's a missed opportunity. I have a six-year-old son, and he can't play any of the sports games right now. It's too much. And if we had NBA Street, or if we had, you know, a simple, fun version, arcade version of a sports game, I think it would be a great opportunity. Yes?
I have a question. You mentioned earlier how in the past we had two games for every sport. There were, you know, 10 years ago we had 2K Hockey and NHL 14, and I noticed that, you know, out of the major sports, soccer is the only one that has... I guess there's FIFA, and there's, I guess, Pro Evolution Soccer.
Yeah, yep. And then basketball.
And basketball, too. Yeah, but the question is, what is the biggest obstacle to having more competition for those sports games? Is it just simply licensing with major leagues, or is there a market maybe to make a good sim that maybe doesn't have licensing? But maybe, you know, we, like I said, for example, Pro Evolution didn't have the actual Premier League teams, but they had other
right.
teams. So.
Right.
I'm just wondering, is there a market for that, or is that, I'm just wondering.
Yeah, there's a market. There's two major obstacles. Number one is the license cost itself. Mm-hmm. As Owen mentioned earlier, the leagues have a real premium on their value, so if you want to play, you got to pay big. And then to create these games from scratch, if you don't have a strong foundational engine, it could take you 2, 3, 4 years sometimes to create it. So that is a extremely difficult combination to overcome. And even EA with NBA Live, like yeah. you saw what happened with them. They have a lot of power and resources. They pay them a lot of money for the licensing. And the fundamental game just doesn't work nearly the level that it should. So those are barriers.
And they sold tens of copies of that. So there is right. no way they made back their investment on the license. So even if they might look, hey, in 10 years we'll gain 40% market share. Is it worth it to get that 10 years, or do we just pull the plug now and be done with it?
And consumers are a lot smarter now. You don't get nearly as many people that will just walk into a store and buy a game with the NFL or an NBA logo on it. All right, we got time for one more question.
Growing up, I played a lot of college hoops games. You know,
yeah.
And a lot of the college football games.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, you know, with the player likeness disputes and the conference disputes, it's starting to look like I'll never be able to play those games again. You know, what do you guys see as the end game for the likeness disputes and the conference disputes? And will there ever be another NCAA football or basketball game?
Yeah. Owen, I'm not sure if you heard that, but we got like just a minute or so. But the question is, will we see another NCAA game at some point in the future? And what will have to happen for that to happen?
The resolution of the O'Bannon lawsuit and the Northwestern organization into a labor union. The NCAA has to fundamentally change how it does business for us to see a video game going forward. It's dependent entirely upon long-term forces. It won't be for a while. That's what it depends on.
And what's the NCAA going to look like when that is done?
Yeah, it's definitely unfortunate. All right, well, hey, I want to thank Kat Bailey, Sumit Sarkar, TJ Lowerman, Owen Good, and all of you for coming out. This has been great. Thank you very much. Have a great PAX East. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Rich Grisham. If you like what you heard, we ask you to please subscribe to the show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio or the Windows Store, and also rate it and review it if you would too. And please make sure to follow each of our panelists on Twitter. They are as follows: Operation Sports Chris Sanner at Chris SNR, Pasta Padre is Brian Weedy at Pasta Padre, Polygon's Owen Good at Owen Good, US Gamers Kat Bailey at the_KatBot, Polygon Sumit Sarkar at Sumit Sarkar, That Sports Gamer's TJ Lowerman at That Sports Gamer, Operation Sports Steve Noah at Steve OS, and Operation Sports at Operation Sports. So thanks again for listening. We were able to do the show because of the great listeners and because of the great people at Operation Sports.